In this week's Gospel, the fifth Sunday of Lent, we hear the story of the woman caught in adultery. We are told, in fact, that she is caught in the very act of committing adultery. If that were the case, then where is the man? Does it not take two to tango, as they say? Obviously, what is important is not the woman's case as such, but the trap being laid for the Lord. The establishment hate him. He flouts their authority. And so the Pharisees take sides with the Sadducees. Normally, they despise each other, somewhat like our Labour and Liberal politicians, but they get together for a common cause to trap him. Or perhaps somewhat like Theresa May in Britain, seeking help from the opposition in her Brexit exit strategy. Anyway, the ultimate goal of these Jews is to discredit Jesus publicly. And the woman's sin is the bait. For that reason, her accomplice is irrelevant. The scenario is well set, for the culprit has clearly broken God's law and deserves punishment, that is, being stoned to death. If Jesus claims this is unjust, then he is in direct opposition to God's laws and cannot claim to speak with divine approbation. On the other hand, if Jesus claims that she die in this horrible fashion, then where is his mercy and forgiveness, which he promises to all and sundry? Jesus is caught between a rock and a hard place, as the saying goes. Have you been locked into some awkward situation where you are damned if you do and damned if you don't? A no-win zone? What is the best advice? Sometimes it is not what we say in these circumstances, but what we do that matters most. What does Jesus do? He squats down on the ground and writes. Is he drawing, doodling, noughts and crosses? We are told that he is writing, which means words are being penned in the dirt. This is the only record we have of Jesus, a divine person, writing. Just think, God inscribes his thoughts. And what are the words? We are not told. After a period of time, Jesus stands and makes a statement that will echo throughout time on every human heart. He says, "He who is without sin, cast the first stone." And no hand dares to move. For we are all sinners, guilty before the sinless one. He bends down again and continues to write, and the people, seeing the words written one by one, departs, starting with the oldest. What would send them away? The words banish them one by one. What did he write? We may presume he wrote their sins. The oldest, having sinned more, left first. Perhaps with the writing of the sin, Jesus looked at the culprit. That piercing glance, those knowing eyes, penetrated the very depths of the soul. Once the mob has left, Jesus turns to the woman and, filled with mercy, heals her misery with the words, "Neither do I condemn you." She is freed from the burden of guilt and granted divine forgiveness. But divine compassion always requires conversion. It is a two-way street. After having been forgiven by her sin by he who is sinless, she too becomes sinless by leaving her sinful past behind. She begins anew. True compassion always leads to heartfelt conversion. Compassion without conversion is a farce, and conversion without compassion is harsh. God is rich in mercy and wants to take away our misery in confession. With true sorrow, our sins are forgiven, and we receive divine grace that bolsters our will so that we won't sin again. We need to remind ourselves that with His grace, I am changed. With His grace, I begin again. But we must comply with His will and avoid occasions of sin, and seek His will before our own. Conversion is a daily reality that involves effort and conviction. For that reason, it is incorrect and a mistake to say in the act of contrition, I will try not to sin again. The word try here is already an admittance of defeat. It implies that God's grace is ineffective in the willpower. Once the actual grace is given, the Lord requires that we make every effort to overcome our weaknesses. And sometimes conversion takes time, and it is a gradual change of heart that brings a soul back to God. One such conversion is that of Dr. Bernard Nathanson. He was born in the 1920s in the States and pursued the career of his father as a medical doctor, an obstetrician-gynecologist. After departing from his Jewish religion, Nathanson became an atheist and a key player in the promotion of abortion in America. As a practitioner, he terminated the lives of thousands of babies until one day. We all have one day. With the advent of the ultrasound in the 70s, he realized that the fetus had feelings and seemed human. It was human, after all. This is the first stage of his conversion. He turned away from doing evil, was converted. And wanting to instill reality into the abortion industry, he narrated later the film called The Silent Scream. The next phase was the admittance of his sin. In 1974, Nathanson wrote, I am deeply troubled by my own increasing certainty that I had in fact presided over 60,000 deaths. He also wrote that he performed an abortion on his own child. He doubted that he could be forgiven. His misery dragged him over the years through alcoholism and 4 divorces. Is there a God of mercy to heal my misery? The last stage of his conversion occurred in 1996, when he came home as a Catholic and was baptized by Cardinal O'Connor in a private mass in St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. When asked why he became a Catholic, his reply was, no religion matches the special role for forgiveness that is afforded by the Catholic Church. He died in 2011. Let us avail ourselves of this great sacrament of forgiveness during Lent and go not alone. Take someone who has been away from the faith with you so that in finding compassion, they too may experience conversion.